Welcome to the Forecast F1 podcast. Second race of the season for 2025 took place this weekend at the Shanghai International Circuit. Of course, it was the Chinese Grand Prix, and we have a lot to discuss, as we typically always do, because this weekend was also the first sprint weekend of the season. As always, host myself, Anton, Savannah. Savannah, let's start with you. Anything to say, first of all, to round off how you felt about this weekend?
There were a lot of upside downs, as I'm sure you can agree. But I think overall, we saw quite a few teams have good pace. And obviously, tire management became a big thing at this circuit, as the temperatures were a little bit warmer than usual, even though it was more or less the same as what last year was when we came to the circuit. Definitely still saw that McLaren had the most consistent pace, I would say, besides Russell. But, I mean, then we pulled out a complete surprise and showstopper from Hamilton in the sprint race, which we'll probably get into a little bit later, for Ferrari. So, yeah, there's a lot to talk about.
Absolutely. Anton, what about yourself?
Yeah, it was a very nice weekend. Actually, it was less chaotic than the weekend in Australia. But yeah, first sprint weekend of the season, and actually prior to the weekend we were talking about it a little bit, and I was quite excited to have a sprint weekend again. When we first started having sprints, I wasn't the biggest fan, but they're starting to grow on me, and also forecast wise I like it. More points on the board, blind predictions, and just all in all more different sessions with something to something exciting to watch. So I think it was a good first sprint weekend of the year, and I think what we should probably do is try to go over all the different sessions as chronologically as we can, because I've almost lost track of everything, although I guess with how organized the two of you regularly are, I think we'll be able to go through
it. I mean, I'm organized here, maybe not necessarily elsewhere, but I'll take that. But yeah, I think it's probably a good idea that we get into it chronologically. Of course, with the sprints, it can always be a little more chaotic in terms of that. So let's get into sprint qualifying. I mean, we had what we would, I guess, consider a few surprises. The most notably one is Lewis Hamilton taking pole. The track itself, we should also mention, recently had some resurfacing done. So this is a track that is not forgiving by any means necessary. So to see Lewis be able to pull that out, number one, impressive. Number two, in the Ferrari, I'm sure that we all have, regardless, been excited to see Lewis be in a position or hope for a position where maybe he could secure that first pole in a Ferrari or secure the first win. So I thought that was the most impressive thing that I would take, or the first impressive thing that I would take out of sprint qualifying.
I definitely agree with you there, Sam. I think a lot of the team's compassion in regards to radio messages last week, as said by the drivers, not everybody understands from an outside point of view. And I think the revitalization of the team for Ferrari when Hamilton got the pole was enough to see how it really encouraged them for the weekend, while they were struggling with some graining and pace from time to time, with Leclerc saying that he was not entirely comfortable, whereas Hamilton was saying, in comparison to Melbourne, he was almost a different person in the car, and the car was coming alive for this track.
Yeah, no, and I think that actually what was interesting, we're all anticipating also to see how the rookies are doing, and I think that was something in the sprint qualifying in the first session that caught my eye, is that many of the rookies actually out-qualified their teammate. Mm-hmm. With Bortoleto going through, actually Hülkenberg not going through, and also Biermann going through, Ocon not going through, Doohan of course didn't get through, but he did set a better time than Gasly. So that was very interesting, and I think in general for the rookies, of course, this setup with only one practice session, so much for us going through things chronologically because we already skipped that, but the practice session is only there for 1 hour, so little time for everyone to get, you know, a good setup, and that makes it even more difficult, I think, if you're a rookie compared to some of the more experienced drivers. But Yeah, I think you already mentioned Lewis, and I do think that that was the big surprise, even to some extent. I was definitely not expecting that. I think the first weekend in Australia was somewhat rough for Ferrari. This one would also end up I would say mixed, but we'll get onto those mixed feelings. Yeah, it was a good session. It was it was interesting, and I don't know. All in all, I thought that Lewis setting that time, I didn't expect him to really convert that also into a win in the sprint race, but he did. And I guess we can straight get into that sprint race a little bit. As I was saying, I guess it was not the chaotic session as what we had seen in Australia with the race, of course, being wet. We knew that we would have more of a dry weekend here in China, but at least that was a first time to really get a watch on for the cars in normal conditions and how they would perform. And of course, there's not too many regulation changes from last year into this one, but it's always still interesting to see how things really turn out. And I think one of the main takeaways from the sprint was that it seemed that Lewis at the front was very much able to take care of his tires much, much better than everyone else behind him who were struggling, who were reporting things on the radio, who visibly had trouble to really keep their tires alive. And I think that was my main takeaway, was that okay, it's really the clean air, having clean air up front is really going to make a huge difference this season.
No, I completely agree with you there, Anton. I think a lot of the teams possibly underestimated how much the clean air affects the Ferrari, because like you said, Hamilton definitely managed his corner work, his tire work, everything to the absolute maximum, and it paid off. We saw Norris continuously complaining this weekend on the front left, and I know this track is harsh on the front lefts, but even though the McLarens have been the shining stars from the get-go this season, Norris's tire management on specifically the front left this weekend became quite a common radio message from him, saying, "I'm struggling with tires," and there was not much they could do because that's how the track evolution was just occurring at that point.
Yeah, I think we also have the factors of course, the temperatures, and I do believe that the resurfacing played a part as well, because if we noticed further to that, with the track itself and the resurfacing, when it can be quite grippy, but of course when you it also can give you quite a snapback, and I think that we saw a lot of situations and examples of that, whether it was during qualifying, that was the most notably during sprint and the regular qualifying session. But I mean, this track for Norris, I mean, there's a lot of hype, like you had mentioned, Savannah, coming into this season with the pace that the McLarens currently have at this point in time, and obviously coming off the backs of last season and the success that Norris had, there is an obvious assumption that he should be expected to do fairly well. And we saw this weekend that he definitely struggled a bit. In contrast, of course, we saw the success of Oscar, and if going to the sprint race, he was in a position where he finished in second, but I think ultimately he could have given Lewis definitely a run for the money. However, it didn't end up being that way, like he had expressed after the race. The dirty air played a big factor to that. And I mean, going forward beyond that, of course, we saw his eventual success carrying into the rest of the weekend. But it was interesting to see the contrast in drivers for McLaren. Of course, one had a lot more success on the track themselves, where the other one struggled a little bit. And I would also say that during the sprint, one other driver to mention is George Russell. I mean, we saw him this weekend obviously have quite a few strong moments and really capitalize upon maximizing the most out of the Mercedes. The Mercedes itself is coming into this weekend, and also primarily coming into this season, with not a large expectation at the start of the season to be competing for the top of the podium. And yet we've seen in Australia, we've seen now here in Shanghai, that he really is trying to squeeze as much as possible out of the car. And we're also seeing he's made maintaining the consistency during the actual races themselves, which is really important. So his strength in qualifying, and then of course him sitting in a position that's pretty strong, securing ultimately during the sprint, he secured fourth, just behind Max, who also was struggling with tire degradation during the sprint as well. He definitely communicated that. But of course, he still managed to secure third, so that's a decent result for him.
Yeah, and talking about strong performances, I also think that Tsunoda should be mentioned there. He was, I mentioned actually after the podcast in Australia that it was Racing Bulls that messed up his strategy. I wasn't aware of the fact that actually he also spun by himself. But other than that, he had a good weekend. Was slightly unfortunate in Australia. He had a strong start of this one, I would say, and was very, very happy to see him finish in the points, especially, you know, with all the talk also about that second Red Bull seat. Of course, Lawson didn't have a great sprint. Well, not only a great sprint, he didn't have a great weekend overall. So that puts a lot of pressure on that team, Red Bull, I mean, and also Racing Bulls being affiliated with them. But a very strong performance of Yuki. And I would also like to mention, even though he did not finish in the points, but it was a good performance of Lance Stroll as well, who had a good start of the week of the season last week out, and actually reporting DRS problems at the beginning of the race. I don't know if those were fixed actually, because we hardly ever really saw him on screen, at least I didn't. But he was able to fend off Norris for a very long time, and that was actually one of my indicators also of the dirty air really being problematic for the McLaren. While we know how strong the McLaren is, I think the McLaren showed that on the Sunday as well, how strong they are. So yeah, in the sprint you could really see that Norris had a lot of trouble to pass Lance. He did in the end and pick up a point there. Yeah, that was interesting, and it's funny because we talk or we laugh sometimes a little bit about Stroll, but it seems that when he's got a good mojo, he actually seems to be a pretty decent driver.
I'm so glad this is recorded.
I actually never thought he wasn't, but he just does need to, he just needs to have
make note of this,
you know, something to race for, and some energy and some vibe in his helmet. But a good weekend.
Yeah, I mean, for all the flack we give him at times, and I mean, he gets flack from not just us. A lot of people vocalize that. I think you're right, Anton. I think that we should definitely give him his stars for this weekend and last weekend for having a pretty solid performance overall. So yeah, I but like I said, we definitely, now that that's recorded on the podcast, we're going to go back to that at some point. The fact that you said that about Stroll and being a decent driver.
The time stamp.
Yeah. Here's a question that I have for the two of you. I think because this is going to be coming out of this race weekend, I think this is going to be one of the large talking points going into the following, and that is the conversation of Tsunoda and obviously his success at right now with Racing Bulls, and then Liam Lawson and the opposite. I mean, one thing that I take into account is that we've seen historically drivers who take that second seat at Red Bull, they may have a more stellar performance in it with another team, and they struggle with that second driver's seat. And we're seeing with Liam Lawson that happen right away from the get-go. And in comparison to the previous season, he obviously had some relatively decent success with Racing Bulls. Although we have had conversations at some time, and I know Anton and myself definitely have expressed the fact that we felt like Tsunoda deserved the seat, and I know you mentioned that last weekend, Savannah. My question to the two of you would be, do we believe, of course, with rumors, like there always are, that Lawson is considered to exit very soon, potentially, and have Tsunoda replace even as early as Japan? So do we believe that this is something that would make sense, or do we think that it's a little bit too early and they should give Lawson a fair shot?
I think looking at the past two weekends for Lawson, he's definitely not giving up. He is trying his all. And I mean, when you get to a point when you're in a car that you're as a top team or a previously top team where you've won Constructors' Championships, having to remove a car from Parc Fermé conditions before the race just so that you can see if those changes are going to help you start to wonder, why does that need to be done now? I definitely think on a flip side of the coin, Tsunoda has a more similar mindset to how I've viewed Verstappen in the way he races. They both almost zone into the point where it's only them on the track. Whereas Lawson is still in the more young, egotistical phase of his career in Formula One, where he's out there to challenge everybody and anybody. And he'll do anything on track that will gain an advantage for himself, regardless of what that might be. And it sometimes just puts him a step too far. We've seen him take quite a couple of wide turns on this Shanghai track specifically this weekend. And I know once or twice in Melbourne, the gravel traps were also catching him out. So having to, number one, learn a car that is, I would assume, quite a tricky setup if you're looking at the comparison with Verstappen, and each driver to his own on their driving style. But in comparison to how he performed with the Racing Bulls last year, he was still sitting in the second driver position, but he already knew that he was getting the second seat at Red Bull. So he was sitting comfortably just saying, I'll make my decision at the end of the year and voice it. But coming into the grid at such a late point in the year, he was there just to gain experience. Whereas now, where he's up against Verstappen, where Verstappen is already complaining where his tires are dead and there's no pace in his Red Bull, he's still up there in top five. And we saw that last weekend with a podium. We saw it this weekend on sprint. And he's been there all along. I mean, he finished fourth in the race. So it's not like Verstappen has lost the car completely, even though Newey is no longer in the team. And Lawson being fresh without Newey's advice in the garage might be a factor that's playing into the downfall of his career right now at Red Bull. However, like you say, Sam, if you were to put him in a different team, I mean, we look at Ricciardo, there's a mindset shift that needs to happen. And for Lawson, I think it needs to happen a lot faster than what he think it needs to happen.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think that Lawson, looking at his performance over this weekend, of course the qualifying sessions, both of them speak for themselves, but also during the sprint race, I thought that, you know, I don't mind drivers getting their elbows out, but
yeah,
at times it was also just looking silly.
I agree.
The way he was fighting, and this is one of the things we talk about consistency of the FIA very often, mm-hmm. but actually Jack Doohan got a time penalty, a 10-second time penalty for forcing another driver off the track in the race. But I think that what Lawson did, fighting with Jack Doohan actually during the sprint race, the very same. And I really didn't understand why that wasn't cause for a penalty, because he touched wheels there, and they were lucky that none of them really got any damage. But again, yeah, we shouldn't be looking at outcome, we should be looking at the action, and that for me deserved the penalty too. And I think you make a good analysis there, saying that it's indeed a difficult car to drive, that Red Bull being very pointy. But then again, you know, there are drivers who like that driving style, and if Liam is not one of those, then maybe he's not the right person at the right seat. And yeah, I do think that I always kind of liked Perez being the exception, of course, but I always kind of liked the idea of Red Bull, you know, being quick with their decisions. Of course, it's not nice to the drivers. It's not always, you know, people always criticize them for destroying careers. Then again, you know, if you look at some of those drivers, I mean, the ones that are good enough are still, you know, you see that Albon is still on the grid. Mm-hmm. Sainz is still on the grid. They're even in the same team. And
the no appendix,
you know,
team.
There's many yeah, and all in all, I think that Lawson, yeah, he's either succumbing under the pressure, or he's in any way he's not performing. That's mm-hmm. clear to everyone. Of course, I think, you know, you should give a couple of races time to really see how things turn out. On the other hand, you know, if you do have that second team, the Racing Bulls, it would also be an option to switch them around. He would still be on the grid. I don't know. If I look at it realistically, I think you should give him more time in the Red Bull. Then again, the prospect of having Yuki Tsunoda drive a Red Bull at Suzuka in Japan, I don't know, I would pay for watching that.
Yeah, no, I think another factor that could have come into play towards the end of last year was Lawson, the way I look at it, is still a rookie. He has not completed a full F1 season as of yet. So in my eyes, he falls part of the rookie bunch that have come into the grid this year. And I don't know if the talks happened where if Yuki was moved to Red Bull with Verstappen and took the second seat, Lawson and Hadjar would be in the second Red Bull team, but both on a rookie status. And that fight for first and second seat in that team could have become quite a clash. So they might have analyzed Lawson and Hadjar's statistics overall. In my opinion, I still think Hadjar is the better one of the two, but I digress. That they split the rookies over each team so that not as much responsibility, if that's the right word, was in their laps coming into the 2025 season.
Yeah, I think ultimately, I mean, time will tell. I think we see whether it's Red Bull. We also see an interesting situation with Alpine as well, and the Jack Doohan situation with his results and the pressure of being replaced there. I personally lean more towards you, Anton, and the thoughts that time, I would say that after two races to come up with a decision would be a little too quick. I think out of respect to the previous races that Lawson has shown, it's also important to give him a little bit more time to be able to get used to the car. However, I do think that seeing the way that he drove in some cases this weekend, I think it was more out of desperation for the position that he's in. Time will tell. Yeah. And I think that as much as I believe there should be more time, yeah, I mean, to see Yuki in a Red Bull and Suzuka would be quite something. So why don't we get into qualifying, if there is anything else that either of you would want to mention when it came out of the sprint?
No, I'm ready to go to qualifying.
Yeah, me too. I think it's it is time to talk about qualifying. First pole position for Oscar Piastri in a race.
Unbelievable. And what a lap too. Oh my goodness. That was a lap of all laps. If my memory serves me well, I believe it was the fastest time ever for a pole position at Shanghai. Yep. So, I mean, kudos to Oscar. He really just put it to the limit, and it was well-deserved.
Well, basically beating Lewis's record from the previous day, because that was also the fastest time, wasn't
That's
it?
That's right.
Yeah, so, I mean, we look at when Shanghai came into the calendar, and it was Michael Schumacher who actually set the racetrack, the race lap record, but Hamilton did up that on one of his laps during one of the sessions, and that was subsequently taken by Piastri, and on his second lap in the qualifying session, he actually topped it again with a 1:30.641 second lap overall. So his second lap on pushing for qualifying, he actually outdid himself once again.
I think one thing to also mention in terms of an impressive result would be George Russell as well, coming in second. I mean, that was just splitting the McLarens
out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And again, I think we can take this into account that we're seeing Russell really squeeze everything that he possibly can out of the Mercedes. And even out of two races, looking at the constructors, although it's very early, Mercedes was in second. And this is largely in part to Russell's results, right? So I think it was a fantastic performance from Russell, securing P2. And then, of course, the third driver would be Lando in the McLaren.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think talking about teams, I think it's worth it to also mention the Racing Bulls again with two cars in Q3. And actually, Hadjar putting it on P7. I was very impressed with that. Yeah. And also Yuki on P9, as well as the Williams again in Q3, and again Albon. And I think, you know, we were talking about this also in Australia, that actually Albon was performing slightly better than Sainz over there. And I think again we see a good performance from Albon. I think it's time to consider that, because I've heard a lot of people say that perhaps Albon's going to have a very tough time now with Sainz next to him, because he's always had drivers next to him of the caliber of Latifi and Sargent and these type of drivers, and he's going to have a tough time with Carlos Sainz. But actually, it seems that it's Sainz that still needs to find his way. Of course, Albon's been in that team for a while, right? So he does know where... how the that's a Dutch saying that's not going to work here, how the hairs run, but anyway, okay. it's very good to see that Albon has picked up, and Williams actually has a very good start of the year. I think we can definitely consider them to be fighting for that for the fight behind the first four teams, so to speak. And and I wasn't expecting Albon to really be up there from the get-go. So I'm very excited for those two teams. And you were just saying the Constructor Championship, Sam. It's great to see that after two races, it's only Alpine that hasn't scored any points yet. So I think that's a very nice way to start the season. And of course, we know that this being the last year of these regulations, you know, it's typical that all the teams are now bunched quite closely together. That's, you know, it's to be expected, because there's little time to be found in developing the car further. But it's good to actually see that that's the case. Although, you know, I think here a more expected result with one of the McLarens being up front. And actually, if you look at last season, I think Norris quite easily outperformed Piastri in most of the qualifying sessions. And it was good to see this early in the year already that Piastri had an edge over Norris. And also, you mentioned Russell there. I was very glad to see that actually there was a driver that split the two McLarens, because I already felt that it would have been a different start of the race if both McLarens would have been there up front. And I think with Piastri and Norris starting right behind one another, it was a slightly different start than it would have been if they would have started alongside each other. So I guess that sort of brings us already to the start of the race. So whoever wants to take it away, let's start talking a little bit about the Sunday.
Well, one thing I think that needs to be mentioned, and we've talked extensively about Lawson, but he once again started from the pit lane due to a suspension change after qualifying and bringing his car out of Parc Fermé. To me, it was quite a jump for Horner to kind of come out and say, we did it to just make a different strategy and see if it worked. I don't think I've ever seen him say anything like that about Verstappen, even in his early days in the Red Bull team. So to hear that from Christian, it was quite a eye-widening statement to listen to.
Yeah, I think that going into the race, one of the things that you can take as well, just as another topic coming from the coming from this entire weekend, is looking at the exciting close competitiveness and depth of the midfielders, and combined with that, the rookies. And I think during this race we saw some fantastic results, primarily from that whole area. I would say that starting the race, of course, we saw the McLarens be able to take the lead, and ultimately that was the end result of Piastri securing his win and Lando in second. And I do think that the McLarens, with the speed, with the pace that they have on this track, I mean, it was pretty obvious that it was going to likely be a situation where they were going to take the top of the podium, as long as strategy or anything like that did not throw a wrench in the mix. But I would say that, yes, like in the midfield, that was to me the most exciting element of the entire race. Seeing surprises even out of Haas. I mean, what an impressive result for Esteban Ocon, finishing ultimately in fifth. Of course, part of that result was due to the disqualification of Ferrari, which we'll get to later. But just to touch on the midfielders, seeing the success of Haas, and not just Esteban, but Ollie Bearman had a fantastic race. And one of my favorite moments was after he did his overtake, I believe, on Jack Doohan, and came on the radio and just said, ciao. And I feel like there was this resurgence of energy that was coming out of him off of the heels of the Australian Grand Prix, and not such a great result. But I do believe that we've seen previously when he has had a few stints, when he was had his few stints with Ferrari, and we saw the momentum and the opportunity and also the determination that he has carried previously in races, and we saw that reflect during the race ultimately in Shanghai. So I really felt like Ollie Bearman was exciting to watch. I felt Esteban was a silent result. We didn't really see too much of him on the track during the race, and then all of a sudden you see him end up in the position that he was, and that was a fantastic drive. Although Kimi did get driver of the day, I actually, in my opinion, I would have maybe potentially given it to someone like Esteban, because I just felt like ultimately that was a fantastic result. And I'd also say midfielders, touching on that as well, Yuki Tsunoda, fantastic result. And of course, Albon. I would say that Alex Albon to me was one of the impressive ones as well during the race. I mean, at one point in the early on, he came on the radio and just basically expressed to let him do his thing. And he really did. And I think that it pays a little bit more to what you had mentioned previously, Savannah, about the mentality and maybe what would be his position at this point in Williams coming into a season with Carlos Sainz as a driver. And I think we've seen more of an evolved Albon this year, at least in the early stages. Mm-hmm. And you can tell even by coming on the radio, and whether it is his results over the last two races or how he's communicating, he has confidence in what he's doing. And I think that there's no doubt 100%. That he's a highly skilled driver, but to see it translate onto the track is impressive. And I think that the season is very bright for Williams by the looks of it now. This is still early days. But again, those are just a few highlights of what I believe were impressive performances when it came from the midfield side. And I think it also foreshadows into this season that we have a lot of things that could change the outcome of races and make it really exciting. I mean, Anton, the fact that you mentioned that Alpine is the only team without points right now really shows the level of depth and the closeness of where we are at in the performances of the cars. And we still have a very long season to go. So I think it really shows that there is going to be a lot for us to talk about in that area.
Yeah, I think that one of the main talking points also for the race is how it developed from everybody thinking it was going to be a two-stopper into actually being a one-stopper. Yeah. And you mentioned Ollie Bearman there, and I think it was mostly him and Lance Stroll that showed to the rest of the teams that actually the hard tire was a very good tire today. And it was mentioned during the broadcast that you could hear George Russell over the radio also suggesting it, that actually it could be a one-stopper. But I think, and that's why I'm getting to this, you mentioned Albon there. I think that Albon was one of the first drivers actually also to find out, because Bearman and Stroll started on the hard and found out on the hards anyway, having to go a little bit longer. But Albon started on mediums, and he, I think, did the longer stint on mediums there at the beginning, together with Hülkenberg, who wouldn't really play a role in the rest of the race. But very decent race from Albon, very decent race from Stroll also. I think it was very, you mentioned Tsunoda there, who was also very unfortunate. I think you said great result. The result wasn't great,
yes,
but his
sorry,
race was
that's
actually
what
very
I meant.
Good.
So I'm glad you clarified
right
that.
There. I think
because it wasn't a great outcome.
But, but you're right. He did have a good... No, but the start of the race was very good. It was just that his front wing decided to give up on him. And that was very unfortunate. And I understood his stress on the radio. And I would even say, actually, that he didn't even sound as angry as he would have had in some other cases in previous years. So I think he's on a learning curve there too. I think he's trying to show to Red Bull that he can be a calm driver. Also in the post-race interviews, he seemed much calmer than I've seen Yuki previously when he had similar results. So his race and that of Lance Stroll, in the end, Lance Stroll did manage to score 2 points because of the other disqualifications. But that was actually a very decent race, and he was somewhat misfortunate with the rest of the field also gathering from his stint on the hards at how good the hards really, really were. I think other than that, we've been avoiding the topic a little bit, although Sam has mentioned it there. I think the other big talking point here is Ferrari. And before I ask you about the disqualification, Savannah, I first want to talk about the coming together of the two drivers at the beginning of the race, where Charles seemed to lose part of his front wing, his end plate.
Yeah, that end plate was taken off due to a contact with Hamilton's right rear tire right in the very beginning of the race. Hamilton also mentioned it on radio where he said, "Someone's hit me," not obviously realizing it was his own teammate. But I think...
Or did he realize?
Who knows? he was probably just being polite over the radio. But I think it was definitely not an intentional contact that happened. And the way Leclerc held his ground after dragging the end plate for quite a bit, and having Verstappen even report the fact that his front wing was broken, Leclerc held his pace quite well after that incident had actually happened. So I still want to give props to Leclerc. I think he had quite a good stint in this race due to the fact that he had damage. I mean, we had Hamilton and Leclerc actually swapping positions because Leclerc was gaining on Hamilton. Came as quite a surprise due to the fact that Hamilton had been showing a little bit more pace than Leclerc across the entire weekend. And I did hear mention of a chassis change between the two. I cannot confirm nor deny that that was an actual thing that happened. But we saw that Hamilton was a lot more comfortable in the car than he was in Melbourne. Obviously, like you've mentioned, Anton, the weather did play a factor. This was the first real dry run that Hamilton has had in the SF25. Where Leclerc, like we've been saying, has had quite a few years to start to know the setup of Ferrari and how they are operating. So I think on overall or a general overview, Leclerc had a good race, but obviously it ended in shambles after the stewards decided that 1 kilogram was not there. So, yeah, a little bit more than little disappointed, but there's obviously nothing we can do looking back at it now. And he wasn't the only one that suffered a disqualification. We had Gasly also coming in 1 kilogram under the minimum weight rating of 800 kilograms. And Gasly was also disqualified. And we then can see that that contributes to Alpine once again not having constructors' points at this point in time. And Hamilton also suffered, unfortunately, with the plank assembly being shaved down too far, according to the 9mm regulations, across the board, no pun intended. So yeah, it was a bit of a bummer day for Ferrari. And I think it's a lot to learn. And I think what possibly contributed to it, I mean, I when I was watching the race, I still mentioned to my sister that at around lap 33-34, Leclerc should have pitted at the point where he had about 4 seconds on Hamilton and 17 seconds on the person behind Hamilton, because changing a nose cone with your front wing takes about 7 to 8 seconds on average, and therefore he could have done a pit stop as well. I think for the fact that his car was underweight once they removed the leftover fuel in the tank was due to the fact that he had worn his tires out so far that that second pit stop would have prevented him from being disqualified. That's just my point of view.
Well, I think that's very similar to what happened with George Russell in the Belgian Grand Prix last year, is that Leclerc was definitely not, you know, prior to the race, they had thought it was going to be a two-stopper. So, you know, he pitted in lap 15. He would have otherwise pitted again somewhere later in the race. And I guess in their simulations of weight, they would have been on a tire that would have been heavier because of having having less scrubbed less. So yeah, that's a good point. This is also what I thought. This is probably one of the and the same may be true for Hamilton. Although I don't think so, because Hamilton actually did do a two-stopper. He did go for two hard tires, so that wouldn't have caused the wear on his skids. But unfortunate for the Ferraris, and unfortunate for Leclerc and Hamilton, actually the same two drivers that also got disqualified was it last year in one of the US Grand Prix, or was it the year before that, with the same the reason as the disqualification of Hamilton now. So yeah, very unfortunate. Then again, this is the reason why we have rules and What would a competition be without rules? So, yeah, it's very unfortunate, but yeah, that gave some fortune to some other drivers, thereby ending in the points, because Stroll, well, actually would have been Gasly who would have moved up, but yeah, Gasly also being disqualified, it was now Stroll in ninth, and Sainz scoring one of the final points. I know one of the three of us had Sainz actually predicted on P10 there for the race, so that's going to be interesting to look at in a bit. But it's now Ocon is now actually the highest ranked in the championship, the highest ranked driver with a Ferrari motor.
Wow.
So that describes, yeah. But I do think you mentioned the Haas's, Sam, I think it was you, but I do think it's worth it to give a shout to that team, not just to the drivers, because the drivers did a very solid job this day, but also the team. You know, if you look at where they were in Australia, and they were so far behind that I was very, very scared that they would turn into one of the well, let's say recently Williams stories, where or let's say last year Kick Sauber, where they didn't score, well, they scored some points with Joe in one of the last races of the year. But I was very afraid for Haas, but both drivers scoring points, great result for them, great turnaround. And I think if anyone is yeah, is due a little party for the Sunday, I think it should be Haas, because they can be proud of themselves.
Absolutely, completely agree.
Yeah, I think it was a big surprise for them having double points, but it's a very well-deserved double points if we look at how both drivers conducted themselves this weekend. So hats off to them.
Well, that's what I was just about to say.
All right, we're going into the scores, and I think we have quite a tight pack on our side for the forecast. Anton, how's it looking?
Yeah, it's looking good. First of all, we had 1,512 players this weekend, and that's a very good amount. And regarding scores, of course, yeah, similar to last week, we had some changes to the final outcome of the race, or the final classification. So of course, I already did a rundown of all the scores. I already started on a summary, but then yeah, I had to redo everything. Of course, for me and Sam, the race was 3 in the morning. What I did was I actually slept from 7 to 2, then watched the race, and then thought that I would get away with posting the scores and going back to sleep, but that took a while. So I have two versions here. So we're gonna. It's quite interesting what the disqualifications did to the scores.
But
we'll get to that in a bit. Yeah. We'll look first at podiums. So I want to know from the two of you, because that's gonna later depend. I'm gonna say that the one who gets closer to the answers is gonna start with the quiz later on. So how many people do you guys think predicted a right podium for the sprint and a right podium for the race?
Ooh.
Sam, I'll let
well,
you go
sprint
first.
I think it's gonna be quite low. I'm gonna say maybe 8 people for the sprint, and for the race I'm gonna go with 34.
And I think I'm going to go a little bit higher for both. My sprint would probably be at around 24 people. And then the race itself, I would actually put probably 93 people.
Okay, that's a good start of the weekend for Sam, because we're closer on both. In the end, surprisingly, we'll get to all the individual drivers later of the sprint, because we're going to run both the sprint outcome and the race outcome in the quiz. But there was no one that correctly predicted that podium. Hamilton,
that's
Piastri,
actually surprising.
And Verstappen for the sprint.
I thought maybe at least one.
Yeah, that no, yeah, it's well, you thought 8 actually, because that's what you guessed, so I suppose that's what you thought. But yeah, regarding the race, Piastri, Norris, Russell, there Ooh. Were 8 people that had that podium, which I would have also expected to be slightly more actually than that. But interestingly, I also you know, in the meantime, when we had to wait, I had some spare time. So actually, I checked how many people, because last time out we had 1,826 players for Australia. I checked how many people had this podium, but then for the race for Australia. I thought that would be an interesting one. And there were actually only two people. So it seems like, you know, with the information that we had from Australia, people adapted quite well because we had less players, but we had more people that predicted the actual podium. So actually, interestingly, one of those people out of the two not only predicted that podium for Australia, also predicted it today. So actually got that podium right. But anyway, I'm digressing a little bit. Let's look at the average sprint points and average race points. I don't know if you guys recall what was the average score for Australia.
Please
but
don't.
I won't make that a quiz question. I'll actually help you out there a little bit.
So
the average, the average. Now, the average score in Australia for the race was 25.3. So, yeah, actually, for the sprint this time, well, I'll just run this through rather than do a quiz. Of course, with the sprint, there's less points to be scored. There's 36 points to be scored in the sprint. We had an average of 14, which I thought was fairly high if you look back at sprints in previous years. And the average score for the race was also quite high, much higher than it was last year. Last weekend. It was 41.2, so that got us an average score of 55.2 points for the whole weekend.
I don't think that's bad at all.
It's a pretty solid result, I think.
It is not. It is definitely a good result. We're all doing a little bit better than we were last weekend. And actually, with the initial classification of the drivers before the disqualifications, we had five players that scored more than 100 points. So that means we got 101 points available for the race, 36 for the sprint. So that gets us to 137. Of course, last year in the sprint weekends, it was 138 because we would have the fastest lap point, which we don't have this year. But those five players who scored more than 100 points got reduced to only one single player who scored over 100 points after the disqualifications and the Ferrari drivers being taken out. So
that's what I call talent, staying above 100 after three disqualifications. So well
done.
Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, and another thing is that, like, I looked at the podium after the initial race, and then you know, we first heard only about the disqualifications of the weight for Leclerc and Gasly. So I actually recalculated the scores, and I found that the podium actually would have stayed the same, of course with different points, but it would have been the same people on the podium. But after that disqualification of Hamilton, things actually changed a little bit more than unfortunately there was someone who was initially on the podium but who is no longer on the podium, so I will mention him because I felt slightly bad. But Mike Baloch from Hungary would have been on P3, but after those disqualifications fell down to P4, unfortunately. But on P3 we have somebody else, and that's Emma Yu from Singapore. She actually initially was on P35 before the disqualification, so a P35 and P3 is quite a jump.
Very nice.
So congratulations to her. It's actually interesting that all the people on the podium scored the same amount of points in the sprint. So all three people on the podium in the end scored 23 points during the sprint. That's with 36 points available, quite a high score. And Emma scored 73.3 in the race, so that got her total to 96.3. And we had Pablo Balaguer from Spain, who was initially P1, so unfortunately after the disqualifications he dropped down P2. He initially had 114 points, so 23 in the sprint as well and 91 in the race, but with the disqualifications only scored 75 in the race, meaning he got 98 points. And well, he's still on the podium, but doesn't win the weekend. And the weekend is won by who was initially P2 with the first classification, and that's Jack Woods from Canada. Woo-hoo! Actually, Sam, and Jack scored 23 with the sprint, and 23 with the sprint and 79.5 in the race. So that means he actually got to 102.5 points, which is actually topping the highest, as somebody noted in our forecast chat. That's higher than anyone scored during last season. Of course, last season we had Ana Cardenas, who scored a perfect prediction for the race in Japan, scoring 102 points. But that was not a sprint weekend. That was a regular race where she had everything correct, including fastest lap. But we had nobody outscoring that, even during the sprint races. Of course, we have had that the years prior to that. We've had, I think, our highest score was 121 by Una Rakonac from Serbia. I do tend to remember the names in the high scores.
I remember that one as well, yes.
staying there for a long time. Una scored 121. Anyway, I don't think... we'll see if during any of the other sprint weekends that score can be attained. But I remember saying it at that point in time. I doubt that that score is going to be beaten anytime soon. But we'll see. Anyway, Jack Woods scored the P1 and... great result, and we will also actually find him back in the ranking when we add up the two races. But we'll get to that in a bit. Before that, I want to hear from the two of you. Who do you think top three countries with players this weekend? So, which three countries had the most amount of players for the race in China?
I'm gonna go with Kenya in first position, probably Argentina in second, and I want to say Zambia in third.
Okay, I'm gonna agree with you on Kenya. I will say Argentina as well, but I'm also gonna say Lebanon in the top three.
Well, you're both right on Kenya topping this ranking with 107 players this time, but P2 and P3 were different countries than the ones that you guessed. So we had 84 players from Mexico and we had 79 players from Spain. So those were the countries with the most amount of players this weekend. And if we look actually at the ranking of the countries, I think it's interesting to mention... Well, let's first mention who's on top of the list there. So it's actually Kenya on P1. Spain is on P2, even though they had fewer players, but they do have more points than Mexico. So that's the top three. The country that gained the most amount of positions was Bolivia, and they come in at P20. They actually had a really large increase in amount of players. So that's very interesting to see. Batches of people from specific countries joining, mostly through WhatsApp groups that are filled with people from one specific country. That's also the reason why we have so many Kenyan players, because there's a lot of WhatsApp groups from Kenya, different ones where they are all competing in Forecast F1 and decided to make that their the main fantasy game for the season.
That's
so that's really cool. And the highest newcomer in countries is Qatar. No players from Qatar during the Australian weekend, but we had two players from Qatar this weekend, and those two actually scored a very good point tally as well. So they come in at P87. So that's interesting. And I think, talking a little bit about countries, as you may know, we have some collaborations with some F1 merch shops around the world. So let's have a look at those that won prizes. And of course, we first turned to DRS Lane in Lebanon. And the highest Lebanese ranked player this weekend is Anthony Al-Chadrawi. And he scores 82 points and finishes in P23, just
nice
outside
result
of the top 20. But he does win a $10 voucher in the DRS lane. Yeah. And with that, we move to Manila, Philippines. And at the pre-game merchandise motor shop, we find that the top three, so the podium, all podium scorers do get a voucher over there. And we're going to get into pronouncing Filipino names, which I'm probably not that good at, but I'm going to give it a go. On P1, we had Martin Villarraza from, obviously from the Philippines. All of these players are from the Philippines. He scored 77.8 points. And on P2, we have Tintin Sagun with 62.8 points. And on P3, we have Edward Nejal with 60.6 points. And not only they win prizes, they also hand out a prize at pre-game merchandise for the winner of the season, and also for the runner-up, also for number three, and they actually even hand out a prize for the person that's at P1 during the season break. So a lot of prizes to play for if you're part of the pre-game membership club.
Very nice, guys. Well done.
Yeah, and that brings us actually to looking at our forecast F1 championship. And I'm excited for this year to see who's, because, you know, with this amount of players that we have, it's going to be interesting to to see who's going to claim that top prize. It's going to be more and more competitive each year. So, of course, after the first race in Australia, the top three were those that finished on the podium for Australia. So let's first have a look at how they did for the race in China, or for the whole weekend in China. On P1, we had Ross Sorensen from Ireland, but he DNF'd this weekend. He didn't make a prediction. So actually, he drops from P1 to P. he drops from P1 to P1679. I think that's the biggest drop ever in this game.
Ross, you better be back next week.
Yeah, right. That's a painful one.
Almost as painful as the double DSQ from Ferrari.
Almost as. So we had William Kaguna from Kenya on P2 last weekend, and he had a good result actually this weekend. He scored 67.8 points, which put him on P117 for this weekend in China, which actually means he's on P4 in the championship. So dropping from P2 to P4 is not all that bad compared to Ross.
No,
and then we had Gisela Maizares from Argentina on P3. She scored only 49.8 points here in China, and she's now on P35. Not all that bad, but could have been better. But I guess we can work up from William Kaguna, who's now on P4, to go to P3. And actually, on P3, we find Filippo Morelli, who in Australia finished P4. So actually, the P2 from Australia is now on P4, and our P4 from Australia is now on P3 in the ranking. He scored 73.5 points this weekend, finished on P75. I don't think it's necessary to mention that Filippo Morelli is someone from Italy. I think it sounds pretty Italian, although so does your name, Savannah. Yeah. But and a lot of Argentinian surnames too. So I do mention he's from Italy, and he has a total score now of 133.4 points. So that's what gets you to P3 in the classification for forecast. On P2, and this is actually very interesting, Sam, we have a P2 and a P1 currently in the championship from Canada.
Look at that. Canadians showing up. I love it.
Yeah. And we had a P3 at the end of last year also. So
that's right.
You guys are performing very well. James Cochrane from Canada finished P25 actually in Australia and finished P10 this weekend with 85.5 points, showing you that you don't necessarily need to be on the podium to be at the top of the ranking. He has a total point tally of 133.8 points, so there's only 0.4 points between number three and number two. Very, sure. Very tight. It is slightly more points that Jack Wood has. Jack Wood finishing first this weekend after the disqualification, scoring the 102.5 points that I had mentioned, and with that together with his points in Australia, he finished 155th over there, but he has 144.8 points. So he is 11 points ahead of our P2 and has a great start of this season, I can only say.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, well done.
Very nice start for the Canadians. Woohoo!
What about our starts? I think it's I will look at our results for this Chinese Grand Prix. Well, there's a big sigh there from you, Sam. Let's go to you first. What did you predict this weekend, and how do you feel about your points?
Well, Anton, as you know, my memory isn't that great, but I can tell you that I didn't predict either of the podiums in the correct order, that's for sure. I do, however, believe that for the race, I did go with Lando win. I did go with the McLaren 1-2. However, I feel like I split it in between the sprint race and the real race, and I can't remember which one I did that with, so I'm sure you will fill
I
me
will.
In.
You went with the McLaren 1-2 for the sprint, actually. You went with Norris, Piastri, Verstappen over there. Actually,
right.
Sam, quite an accomplishment. I don't know if it's a good one, but you scored more points in the sprint than you did in the race.
Oh, yeah. So I knew there was going to be...
You win some, you lose some.
Yeah. Judging by Anton's laugh before he even started to discuss my result, I knew it was going to be bad. So I mean, look, Ferrari being disqualified hurt all of us. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, it was a tough weekend to predict, so I'll give you that. But yeah, actually, when you had 20, you scored 20.3 points for the sprint, Sam, and I remember after the sprint, I was looking at the points and I thought that, well, that's a great start of the weekend. I think the highest point tally for the sprint for anyone was 25 points. I think that was scored by Edgar Martinez from Mexico, if I recall correctly. Well, I do recall correctly. But yeah, there was a lot of people actually, I don't know, I released a mid-table just after the sprint, not only on Instagram, also on the app. So actually you were able to see your sprint points already prior to the race. Mm-hmm. But Sam, yeah, 20.3 points during the sprint, 20 points during the race. You went with a podium of Norris, Verstappen, Piastri. So that got you 40.3 points in total. I do mention that actually you were one of those, well, actually you were the only one out of the three of us that had Sainz correctly on P10. Mm-hmm. So you scored that one full point for Sainz.
Well, you know, I'll take that one point, especially considering the result of the race. So that's fine. That's fine. You win some, like Svenja said, and you lose some.
You finished on P1018.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's not... actually, on the total ranking, you're now P354. So it's not too bad. I mean, you had...
Not too bad.
You had a good amount of points in Australia. Well, yeah, actually, it's interesting because most people scored a lot more points this weekend than they did in Australia. With you, it's the other way around. You scored more in Australia than you did now.
I seem to like to do
things backwards. I'm done rubbing it in.
Listen, take all you want. This is the second race of the season, okay? So sometimes I just need to get a little warmed up.
Yeah, but it's not that I did so much better, but we're going to go to Savannah first. Actually, Savannah, you and me, we were very close in the rankings this weekend. What were your predictions for the sprint and for the race?
So my sprint prediction, if I remember correctly, was Norris, Verstappen, Leclerc, and that went horribly wrong with Hamilton's surprise win. And then my race prediction was a 1-2 for McLaren with Norris on first, followed by Piastri, and then Leclerc in third. However, that also did not surface in any way, shape, or form.
It did not, but you did score a decent amount of points during the race, actually. You scored 9.3 for the sprint, and you had 43 for the race. So it wasn't bad at all. You scored 52.3 points, ending up in P551.
It's better than last week, that's all I can say. So I hope we just keep climbing from here.
That's exactly. That's one way to look at it, actually. You finished slightly ahead of me, but before we look at that, you're now at P1162 in the championship. So that's there's still some room for improvement there, but there is two for me. I went with a Norris Piastri Verstappen for the sprint. I scored 17 points there, and I went with Norris Piastri Verstappen for the race too. The only thing I switched up was in the latter positions, where I didn't put any rookies on the points for the sprint, but I did in the race further back. But scoring 34.6 in the race, so a total of 51.6. So that was just 0.7 points behind you, Savannah, and I finished on P588 with that. So again, I think we all have some room for improvement, and actually was making fun of Sam, but Sam in the end is classified higher than both of us in the championship, because I'm at P683. So I should shut up and stop laughing.
Sam still has bragging rights.
Well, look, I don't know how big the bragging rights are right now, given the position. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see once we get closer to the end of the race, really, where we all line up. the end of the season, not race. Oh, my goodness.
That too, but also the end of the podcast when we'll have done the quiz and we can see whether you can tie there, because Savannah won that last weekend out. But before we get to the quiz, actually looking at the high scores, you know, with this being a sprint weekend and with everyone scoring a lot of points, there's actually only one score still remaining if we look up all the top 20s for the different continents. The only score that's still standing is that of Irosha Prakash from Fiji. She's still in P16 in the high scores for Oceania with her 50.8 points from last weekend. Other than that, all the scores have been replaced with Chinese scores. So way to go, everyone. I think that just shows that there were a lot more points scored by everyone this weekend than last weekend, with the exception of Sam. But Sam, you can actually start the quiz, because you were closer with the podium guesses. So
yeah.
I think that last time out we let last season we let the person who was closer there with the podium choose who would begin. But I've just changed that rule now. On the fly, and the person who gets closer gets to start. So that's the new rule. Like it or not, unfortunately.
I was going to say that FIA is still deciding on that, but we'll let it slide.
Yeah, I think that the forecast international. Well, anyway, let's not compare myself to the FIA. At least I usually don't change scores after the fact. Unless I have to because of the FIA. That's forecast scores. But the quiz scores are what they are. So we're going to do both the sprint race and the actual race. I think that would be fair. And that means we're actually starting with Hamilton. I saw that we had there was quite a few people actually asking in the chat, you know, if anybody had predicted Hamilton on P1. And
I was keeping an eye on that.
Yeah, it was interesting because most of the people that scored, I think the reason people asked was because a lot of the people that scored a lot of points during the sprint did not have Hamilton on P1. But in general were the people who had P2, P3 and P4 in the correct place. So I don't want to give away too much, so let me Sam, you can go first on this one.
Okay, I'm gonna say three people.
I'm gonna say two people.
All right, that means actually Sam, you are closer to the right answer. There was still 15 people that had Hamilton on P1. So that means, Sam, you're just slightly closer with your three. And that's a good start for you, Sam. I think it took you quite a bit to collect your first point last time out. So
That's true. He's having so much fun today. Listen, you just wait, okay? I'm going to come back strong next week, or next race week. Mark my words.
All right, so that means we move to Piastri on P2. Savannah, how many people predicted that Piastri would finish there for the sprint?
I'm going to say probably 163.
Okay,
people.
I'm going to go with 287.
All right, Sam, good start of the quiz. So that's another point for you. It was 490 people, quite a lot, actually, that went with Piastri on P2. So that's 2 points for you already. And that means we move to Max Verstappen on P3.
Okay, Max, I am going to go with 323.
And I'm going to go lower with a 246.
All right, it was quite a bit more. It was 535 people that had him on that P3 spot. So that's
big
another
number.
Point for Sam. I don't know what's happening.
you don't know what's happening. I don't know. Maybe my guesses are translating somehow not into points, but into clearly the podcast. But we'll see. We still have a lot to go.
Yeah, we do. We do still have a lot to go. The next one is P4 Russell for Savannah.
I'm going to go with a more middle mark and say 78.
I'm going to go with 56.
Though you're really both underguessing this one, but you're underguessing it more, Sam, than Savannah. It's 455 people. So that's a first point for Savannah, meaning we move to...
I'm on the
to...
board, it's fine.
Yes. You're done for the day?
Oh, no. I'm not giving up that easily.
All right. Well, Sam, P5 Leclerc.
I'm going to say, I'm going to go to three again, 345.
And I'm going to go to about 406 for Leclerc.
That means, Savannah, you are 27 away from the right answer. And that's slightly closer than Sam, because Sam, you are, I'm doing it on the fly and I haven't had a lot of sleep. But Sam, you're 34 away from the right answer. So the right answer was 379. Ooh. So Savannah is getting another point back at you. We're 3-2. And we move to, for me, an interesting one, P6 Tsunoda.
I think for Tsunoda, it will probably be a lower number, but I could be very wrong. I'm going to go with 12 people.
Okay, I am going to go with 32.
Whoosh, that's very close to the right answer. It was 31. You're only one away.
Ooh, that's a close one. Okay.
That's a very close
I
one.
like that people have confidence in Sonoda, though.
True. I agree. It was more than I thought that would
Yeah.
be. I mean, on a P6, yeah, you wouldn't necessarily. But anyway, yeah. So we get to Antonelli on P7. That one's for Sam.
I'm gonna go with 56.
And I'm gonna go just a tad higher and say 68.
That means it's 4-3. Savannah, you're scoring this point. It was a lot more people that had Kimi Antonelli on
Wow, okay.
P7. It was 433 people.
Jeez.
That's a big number. But you know, I feel like seeing the result, I gotta be honest, I was actually surprised. Not that he didn't have a great race, but I was surprised that he received driver of the day. So I don't know if I would say that I'm surprised that there's a big number for Kimi because I feel like there's a lot of confidence that people have in his results. So, yeah.
100%.
All right. How many people had confidence in Lando Norris finishing on P8?
Ouch.
Norris, Norris, Norris. I definitely think people had him a lot higher, but again, I'm gonna go with a comfortable 41 people.
I'm gonna go with 8.
Well, Sam, you score a point with that because it was only one person out of the
Wow.
1,512. Yeah. And it was actually,
That is
I mean,
wow.
we always mention when it's this little people, but it was friend of the show, Ajit, who
Oh,
had
no
Norris
way.
on P8 for.
Jeez. Okay, but here's a big question, Anton. I feel like he probably did well in the sprint result. That's my guess, considering Hamilton in with Ferrari, and he likes
No,
to.
he put Leclerc on P1 actually, and he had Hamilton on
Interesting.
P7 in his sprint.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in the
Yeah, I'm
just out of
just looking at his
curiosity,
prediction now.
for the race, did he have? I'm guessing the result probably was a painful one for him, judging by the fact the Ferrari was disqualified.
Yeah, he went with the podium of Leclerc, Piastri, Verstappen. He scored in total for the whole weekend 44 points. So that still was
Actually,
more
that's not too
than you
bad.
scored, if I recall
Yeah, it's not
correctly.
too bad.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm just gonna leave it at that. Well, congratulations, Ajit,
That's
on being the one choice for Norris.
on
Clearly, it was
getting
the right
Norris
one.
right. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. All right, we're 5-3. It's still close, too close to call. So we're gonna do the race as well. And for the race, Sam, you also predicted closer to the amount of people on the podium. So you're gonna start this one as well. So that means
Okay.
Piastri on P1. How many people went with that?
Oh, I'm gonna go back to the late twos and say 288.
I'm gonna go higher with 476.
You shouldn't have because it was lower than what Sam was saying was 170.
Oh,
So it
damn.
says, yeah, it's a point
Wow.
for Sam. And we go to the other McLaren who finished second, Lando Norris, in the race, P2, Savannah.
Oh, Norris, I can't fathom the fact that in the sprint he landed up so low, unfortunately, and the race he actually had to hold on due to his critical brake installments in the end of the race.
Yeah. We didn't even talk about that too much, but I really thought watching it
That's
that
very
he
true.
was
Yeah, the
gonna,
brakes.
yeah, I thought he was gonna be overtaken by Russell on that last lap.
Well, thanks to Bortoleto holding up Russell in like the final corner.
Yeah, true. I don't know. That
Yeah.
definitely seemed to make somewhat of a difference, but that was.
Right.
Yeah, I don't want to call it nail biting. I actually would have liked. I mean, I don't know. I think the McLarens are just very fast this year, so I'd like anybody to take points out of Norris because I think that means it's going to be more of a championship
Oh,
until
100%.
later in the season. So I would have liked George to take P2, but in the end he didn't. So we'll
Yeah.
get to George on P3 after this. But first, Savannah P2 Norris.
So, Norris, I'm gonna go with 315 people.
I'm going to go low and say 167.
Okay, well, this one clearly won by Savannah. You were very close. It was 341.
Sure. Okay.
Big number.
And then that means, Sam, you are gonna guess first for Russell on P3.
I'm going to stick to the ones and I'm going to say 185.
And I'm going to go a little bit lower and say 153.
Nice. That means it's getting closer because we're now 6-5. That's another point for Savannah because it was 117.
Still quite a large number.
True.
Honestly, I'm actually surprised. This one, I'm surprised that not as many people chose Russell. Mm. And of course, I was one that didn't. But the only reason I say that is because of his result in Australia.
True.
I think that, it would have been obviously a good guess to keep him in P3.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see how the results translate into the next race and if there's more confidence in choosing him in a higher position.
Well, if you can make it a hat trick.
That's right.
It will be a different story.
No, and you're right. I mean, there's a lot of people who choose reactionary for their picks, so they just go with what mm-hmm. they saw last race. So, I would have also guessed it slightly being higher, but 117. And that means we go to Savannah for Verstappen on P4.
I'm going to say 84 people.
I'm writing down 84, Sam.
76.
Ooh, that means we're at a tie.
Oh.
It's 6 against 6 because it was 210 people that went with Verstappen.
That's
on
a
P4.
Big number.
Yeah, that is a big number indeed. It means we go, Sam, to P5. Ocon, Esteban Ocon on P5. How many people went with that?
Oh, I'm going to say nobody.
What happens if we want to say the same answer, Anton?
No, you can. You're free to choose. In this game, you're free to choose whatever you want to choose.
Okay, then I'm also going to go with no people, because I think he was a bit of a wild card.
means you both score a point, because there was indeed nobody that went with Ocon on P5.
So we're still tied.
Yeah, you're still tied. Yeah, exactly. This is a good run. It's 7
tied.
Against 7. It's a very good run. Yeah, and we're only five, and that's the interesting thing, because this year of not being fastest lap, mm-hmm. there's an even amount of questions.
Yep.
For all the quizzes, regardless of whether it's a sprint or a race. That makes it a little bit more difficult, but now one of the questions being answered correctly by both of you, that means actually it's going to end up in an uneven. So this will be a very interesting one. Let's hope it goes down to the wire. But let's first go to P6. That one's for you, Savannah. Antonelli. Give me Antonelli on P6.
Well, seeing what Antonelli was getting in votes in the sprint, I'm going to go a little bit higher and say 382 people.
I'm going to go just below that and say 363.
Yeah, it was good to go lower than that. It was still slightly lower. It was 270. Okay. But that means the point goes to Samantha. And the next question also goes to Samantha, which is Alex Albon on P7.
I'm going to go with 54.
And I'm going to go lower with 16.
Well, I got to give you this, Savannah. I would have definitely also gotten a lot of lower answer than 54 from Sam, because I expected this to be lower, but it's actually more than the 54.
Wow.
Of Sam. There's 77 people that went with,
nice.
I had to double check this one, 77 people that went with Alex Albon on P7.
Cool. Okay. His confidence in the prediction game is also being boosted by the looks of it, so he's one to watch out for.
He is. Another one, Ollie Bearman on P8, Savannah. It's time to score a few more points to get back.
You're telling me. I'm going to go with 23 people.
I'm going to go just below that with 16.
Ooh, yeah, that's the right direction to go. It means you're at 10 against 7. So it's 9 people that went with Bearman on P8, so it means there's only 2 questions left, and it means that Sam has won it. But we will play until the end, because the next one's up is Samantha to pick the amount of right people that went with her homeboy on P9.
Okay, Lance Stroll, let's go with 63.
And I'm going to go low and say 21.
That means Savannah slightly closer. The answer is in the middle, but you are closer. It's 37, so you're only 16 away from the right answer. And that means it is 10 against 8. Let's see if you can make it 10 against 9 by getting the amount of people that had signs on P10. Well, we know it's at least 1 with Sam.
Yeah. I'm gonna say it's probably about 13 people.
I'm going to go higher than that and say 27.
Yeah, it's actually much higher. There was quite a lot of people that went with the P10. You know, the fastest lap was the wild card of last year in forecast, but
yep.
I think P10 has turned into the wild card. I actually had him on P9. I think, Savannah, did you have him on P9 as well? Did I see that? I'm not 100% sure.
I'll confirm now. I had him on P8.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I had him on P9. Sam, you had him on P10. There was 193 other people together with you. Wow. So 194 that big had number. Him on P10 means we end 11 against 8. So that means actually we're hearing a different anthem this year, this race, yeah, episode.
This race.
and I need some sleep.
Yeah.
But it's good. It means it's one against one.
Yeah, the Canadians have had an overall solid weekend with some of us mm-hmm. at the top of the points.
You can say that.
And Stroll finishing again.
Winning the weekend on the podium and being that. But I mean, I wasn't even thinking about Stroll. I mean, forecast. We have a Canadian winner. We have a Canadian 1-2 in the standings. We have a Canadian winning the quiz. And we have Lance Stroll scoring points. I think it's one of the best days in the year for Canada.
On the flip side of the coin, being an Italian in South Africa, the Italians have not shown face this weekend besides winning with Hamilton in the sprint. So I'm just going to keep my mouth shut.
Yeah, well, but I mean, the Hamilton result is a good one. And Antonelli also actually finishing P7 and finishing P6. He's scoring a lot of points. So out of all the rookies, I think he's definitely, together with Behrmann, of course, because that P8 wouldn't have been a P8. But with the disqualifications, that's a good point haul for him as well. So yeah, all in all, I think good points for the drivers, most of them, good points for people in forecast. And that means we have 2 weeks ahead of ourselves to think about our predictions for the Japanese Grand Prix. And for those that listening, if Red Bull does indeed swap the drivers, then of course you will be able to see those reflected also in the game. But what I wanted to mention is that, you know, if you've already made your picks and it gets switched later on, it actually does switch in the game as well. And the way to look at it is as follows: you're basically picking the car, you're not picking the driver. So that means if you're picking Lawson and he gets replaced by Tsunoda, your pick from Lawson will automatically become Tsunoda, and the person that replaces Tsunoda, if you had picked Tsunoda, it will not stay with Tsunoda, it will become, I'm reading as we're recording this episode that reportedly Red Bull was talking to Alpine to even contract our friend from Argentina, Colapinto. So that would. But anyway, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. But I guess you get the dynamics of how it works in forecast. You're basically predicting a car to finish in a point, not necessarily the driver. But perhaps we don't see any changes at all. That would also be my guess. But we'll see about that. Anyway, what are the two of you looking forward for our eight-shaped track in Suzuka?
Well, you know, I was just going to say Suzuka is one of my favorite races of the season, so definitely really excited for it. Seasonality wise, I mean, previously we've seen races where there's quite a bit of rain, but I think ultimately because it's at the start of the season, it's going to be a little bit more favorable, I believe, in terms of not having rain in Japan. So I think ultimately really excited to see what happens. This is a great track, lots of excitement typically there. And I mean, Anton, my question to you though is, for us in particular, because we're in the same time zone, the race is at 1 a.m qualifying's at 2 a.m and I know that this year you've decided to stay up to watch the last race and the one prior. So I mean, are you going to stay committed to that when it comes to Japan?
Yeah, definitely I am, because actually, you know, it's not just watching the race, it's also doing the scores right after, and I want people to see their points as quick as they can. So if I watch it a lot later, then people will also see the scores later. So yeah, I'm going to go to bed really, really early in the evening again and wake up when the pre-race show starts. And yeah, I don't think it's such a bad schedule. I was joking about it a little bit, but you know, I slept from 7 to 2, which is, you know, it's 7 hours sleep, and then after doing the scores I still went to bed for 2 hours before we were recording this podcast. So I think it's a decent schedule. Well, not the most ideal one, but then again, you know, you need to, if you're an F1 fan, you need to commit as well. And you know, for us on this side of the world, these races are more difficult, but then you know, depending where you are, if you're in other places, then other parts of the season are more difficult to watch. But I don't know, I remember being a kid, this was one of the things that I actually enjoyed about F1. It made me excited, is, you know, knowing ahead of the weekend that actually there was a race in the middle of the night, and wanting to see that. And that was, I don't know, that the idea of staying up and watching a race, yeah, that still gets the little kid inside of me excited. So yeah, I think I'm definitely doing the same thing for Japan.
Well, I think it's also a testament to the dedication, right? Being willing to stay up regardless of the time to make sure that the scores are up for everybody. So
yeah, I think on behalf of everybody that does play the game, Anton, we do thank you a lot for that sort of input and attention to detail in keeping us updated on what's happening in the app. And there's quite a few big things happening in the app, so.
No, you're welcome. I mean, it's not just for all of you. I also want to see my own score as quick as I can. So plus, I think there's something to it to watch the race live. I get more excitement out of that watching it. I mean, I get also more excitement watching the pre-race show. When I'm watching at a later point in time, it's difficult for me to. The pre-race show is somewhat, I skip some of the parts. And then when you watch it live, you can't skip it. And it's actually exciting. It builds up to the climax. So, but everyone has its own way of watching it. You know, I don't want to, everyone's doing it in their own way. And that's completely fine. But yeah, I wish you all best of luck with your predictions ahead of Japan. I don't think they will be particularly easy. I think I'll just already set something myself and then just review it a couple of hours before the deadline. But this is exciting, and let's see how many Canadians are at the top of the boards after Japan.
Absolutely, can't wait.